Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
From the Apostrophe Podcast Network.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton, and this is Backstage at the Vinyl Cafe. Welcome. We have two stories for you today, two stories about love. We're going to start with this story because where better place to start than at the beginning? This is Dave and Morley's origin story. This is a story about how they met and about the early years of their marriage. I have always loved this story for a whole bunch of reasons. I love how visual it is. It's written like a movie. I love how we get to go back in time to meet Dave and Morley as they're just meeting each other. When I was a kid, I used to love looking at old photo albums. I loved seeing my parents before I was born. I loved seeing the them that existed before me. Or I guess I liked seeing the them that created me. I liked seeing who they were rather than who they became. This story feels like that to me. We get to see Dave and Morley back in the day before we met them, but also before they meet each other. I like thinking about who they were back then and trying to tease out how they influenced each other. And I also love how they meet. Skating. I mean, is there a better way for two Canadians to meet than on a skating rink? Especially these two, because they're two people who just sort of skate through life. That sounds negative, but I don't mean it that way. I meant it as a compliment. It's one of the things I admire most about them, their ability to just let go when they need to, their ability to glide, their ability to seek out smooth ground, the path of least resistance. They figure out how to keep it smooth. I like that. And I like this too. This is the story we call Holland.
I mentioned earlier that we wanted to get Dave and Morley here tonight. They come to Ottawa every winter to skate on the canal. And as I said, Dave and Morley met on an ice rink. It was in Providence, Rhode Island, in the autumn of 1970. Morley was working in summer stock, 4 plays, 2 months. Dave came through town with one of those cavalcade of rock shows. He was the technical director of a Dick Clark production. 8 acts in 2 hours, including Question Mark and the Mysterians, the Archies, and Bobby Goldsboro. It was a hateful tour. The musicians hated the music they were playing, and they hated the venues they were playing in, and a sourness descended on the whole enterprise before the first week was over. It was the rock and roll equivalent of a Ford Pinto. The only salvation was the most hated moment of all. The last number of the show when Bobby Goldsboro sang Honey. About 2 weeks into the tour, one of the Mysterians bought a Fisher-Price battery-operated megaphone, and every night a group of musicians would huddle just off stage and try to distract Bobby Goldsboro by singing alternative lyrics during the number. And they'd sing just loud enough so he could hear them and the audience couldn't. And in Saratoga Springs, they rigged up a microphone behind stage so they could feed their version of the song through Goldsboro's monitor. And somehow the feed got rerouted. It was never clear how. And their version, which involved Honey doing unspeakable things with a shaved, greased goat, got routed through the arena's PA system. And to everyone in the audience, it seemed as if the rude version was actually coming out of Goldsboro's mouth. The next morning, he kicked up such a fuss that they had to stop their antics. And instead, every night when it was time for Goldsboro's big number, the Mysterians would move into the audience where Bobby Goldsboro could see them. And they'd put on these big construction ear protectors. And they'd smile evilly and wave at him. Things got so bad that Dave left the show and began to advance it, which meant he would have to arrive in town a few days ahead of everyone else to check the arena out and then, thankfully, to leave town before anyone else got there. And that's how he met Morley, at the end of August 1970, in a 3,000-seat arena in Providence, Rhode Island. It was a Thursday evening, and Dave was leaning on the arena boards waiting for the free skate to end so they could start laying a temporary floor over the ice. And the lights were dim, and they were playing waltzes over the arena's PA, and everyone was paired up and holding hands as they skated around and around. And Dave got a coffee in a styrofoam cup, and he watched the skaters. He was transported back to the arena in his hometown in Cape Breton to the annual Valentine weekend ice waltz. And they used to put lights in the arena ceiling that would twinkle just like stars and the big face of the moon. And the moon would wink its eye every so often, and there was a live orchestra suspended on a plywood platform over center ice. Musicians would have to climb a rope ladder before the show began. All their instruments up there. And Dave's mother made him promise he wouldn't skate under the platform during the polkas. But because when the orchestra played polkas, the platform would swing back and forth. And Margaret would light a cool and say that she didn't mind if the cigarettes got her, but she was damned if she was going to become an item on the TV news because she was the only woman in the history of Cape Breton to be squashed to death by a polka band. That's what Dave was thinking about when Morley skated into his life. She had long chestnut hair, cut in bangs that were no more than an inch below her eyebrows. She was wearing a poncho over a blue army surplus turtleneck sweater. She had bell-bottom jeans on with embroidered cuffs and granny glasses. Dave was bewitched. Dave had sideburns that nearly met at his chin at the time. She was the only person on the ice who could really skate around and around all by herself, one leg crossing over the other in the corners, and every so often she would glide to center ice and get up on her toes and spin around, and Dave watched in awe, and he thought, she must be Canadian. And he had to meet her. So he rented a pair of skates and he got out onto the ice and he couldn't catch up to her. So he slowed down to see if she would catch up to him. And she did. And she just kept going. And Dave was getting frantic as he watched the clock at the far end of the arena, and then suddenly she was standing right in front of him at the blue line. But Dave was going so fast he was going to shoot right by her. And without thinking, he reached out in desperation and he grabbed a hold of her, and she screamed, And then they were suspended in midair, clutching at each other, and for a horrible moment, face to face, and Dave said, "Hi." And Morley said, "Hi," back, like a question, "Hi." And then they landed in a heap. And then Dave insisted on driving her to the hospital, where she had 3 stitches just below the chin. And then they went out to dinner. And then he drove her back to the arena where she had left her car, and he invited her to come to the concert the next night. They didn't see each other again for 5 years, but they did keep in touch by mail. Just occasional letters, and Dave's never said much, but he always sent her quirky things. The week after she and Dave had met on the skating rink, Dave sent her a package of Silly Putty in the mail. And when she opened it, she knew he was the man for her. Another time, he sent her a pair of glow-in-the-dark skate laces. And once, a newspaper from Thunder Bay. Morley, who was back in Toronto by then and had left the theater, she was teaching at the time, she read every page of the Thunder Bay paper obsessively, looking for the significant article. Why had he sent it? She finally decided it was her horoscope, which said, "Your love life is on thin ice. Don't let distance cloud your judgment." No, said Dave. Years later, there was nothing special. I was finished with it, and I just thought you'd like to see it. They were so young, they still thought life had a purpose. They still believed what they were doing was important. When they finally started to see each other, 8 years had gone by. It was 1978. Dave was sick of life on the road. He wanted to come in from the cold. And Morley seemed so normal. When he told her these things, Morley was overcome with absurdity. She was tired of being polite. She didn't want to be normal. She wanted to lose control. But she loved him. She had hope. They got married before the summer was over, and they moved into an apartment near the Grange. And on their very first night together, when they were getting ready for bed, Dave said, "Do you want a little snack?" And Morley said, you go ahead. Dave came back from the kitchen with 4 pieces of bread slathered with mayonnaise. And there were 4 slabs of cooking onion on a plate. And a glass of buttermilk. Morley stared at him, and he said, "It's okay, I haven't brushed my teeth yet." A week later, he had a sore throat, and Morley said, "You should gargle with salt." And Dave said, "No, just throw me one of those socks." Morley said, "What?" And Dave said, "One of those white athletic socks, the wool ones." And Morley said, "What are you going to do with a sock?" And Dave said, "You just soak it in water and fasten it around your neck with a safety pin." Morley just stared at him. Dave said, "You wring it out first." Morley was thinking, "What am I doing here?" But she wasn't about to quit. She was determined to keep trying. Ever since he was a child, Dave loved scrambled eggs. Sometimes when he was a boy, he could hardly wait to get to sleep on Friday nights because he knew he was going to get scrambled eggs for breakfast on Saturday morning. "I make the best scrambled eggs you've ever had," said Morley. The next morning, she squeezed fresh juice and got out their 2 matching coffee mugs and carefully folded their 1 pair of linen napkins, laying them out side by side. And she whisked up 6 eggs and brought them to the table, and Dave stared at them in horror. They were full of green stuff. There were little green flecks all through his scrambled eggs. Pieces of chives that Morley had snipped from the back garden. You live in Cape Breton, you don't put anything in your scrambled eggs, except maybe ketchup. But this was his bride, and she had made these eggs, and Dave ate them, and he said, "I love your scrambled eggs." The next weekend, the eggs came with chopped up mushrooms. And then with tomatoes and cheese, and then with spinach, and on the 5th weekend, it was olives. Dave had begun to hate Saturday mornings. He'd lie in bed grinding his teeth while Morley chopped olives. And he'd think, how did I get mixed up with this person? By the time that first winter came, the winter of 1978-79, they were both thinking this marriage was a big mistake. It was a gloomy January, all the gloomier because January was once Morley's favorite month. When she was a child, Morley's father, Roy, used to make a skating rink in their backyard just for her. And that wasn't always the easiest thing to do when you lived in Toronto. Some winters, Roy had to take Morley's wagon late at night and steal snow from the neighbors' yards in order to have enough to make a rink. But he was happy to do it because she loved to skate. She used to lie in bed at night while her father was out in the backyard, frozen to the hose. And she'd imagine her ceiling was a frozen lake. She'd fall asleep dreaming that she could skate on her ceiling forever. Her all-time favorite book was Hans Brinker. Her all-time favorite dress was the burgundy chiffon costume that her mother made for her in 1956 for the skating club's Christmas pageant. She was a plum. And now she hardly skated at all. Maybe three or four times since that night in Rhode Island when she had met Dave, and here it was, the gloomiest January of all. Less than a year married, and she felt like she'd been given a sentence of solitude. She was unhappy. And then one night on the television, it said that the canals in Holland were frozen over for the first time in 10 years. And it showed pictures of people skating on the canals, and Morley said, I always dreamed of doing that. And Dave said, really? That was your dream? And Morley said, yes. And Dave said, we should go. And Morley said, don't be silly. And Dave said, maybe this is our only chance. Maybe the next time it happens, we'll have kids and we won't be able to go. It was a Wednesday night, and he went to the phone, and when he hung up, he said, was it really your dream? We could leave tomorrow and be back on Monday. The next morning, they went and they bought Dave a pair of hockey skates, and when they got home, Morley held out a present wrapped up in newspaper. She said, it's almost finished. I was going to give it to you for your birthday. I can finish it on the plane. It was a heavy wool sweater. This is a beautiful sweater, said Dave. I love this sweater. When the plane landed in Amsterdam, Morley had her face pressed to the window. She wanted to see everything. She wanted to make sure the canals were still frozen. She couldn't believe this was happening to her. The man at the hotel said, you have to go to Friesland. So on Saturday, they rented a car and they drove into the country. They parked at the end of a road and left their boots and coats under a long row of willows that stood bare and wispy along the bank of the canal. And when Morley climbed down onto the ice, it was like her dream. She felt like she was a little girl again, and she had stepped onto her ceiling. She was standing on a narrow swath of ice that kept going as far as she could see, like she could start skating and she could go forever. It was the greatest skate of her life. They skated past farmhouses with roofs so low that they looked like wool hats pulled almost to their eyes, past huge creaking windmills that Morley said reminded her of herons trying to take off. For an hour they saw no one, and then suddenly they went right through a village and saw an old man leading a donkey with panniers, and a dog pulling a cart, and a family pushing a baby carriage on wooden runners. Once in the middle of nowhere, an old man passed them going the other way. He was sitting on a contraption that looked like a wagon on blades, and he was rowing it along the canal with what Dave swore were cross-country ski poles with toilet plungers fastened to the end. There were footbridges to duck under and frozen intersections with signs that said, Leyden, 50 kilometers, with an arrow pointing down the branch that ran off their canal. It was like being in an earlier time. It was like being in the 19th century. They didn't see a car all day. They ate lunch on the ice at a cafe, on a boat that was frozen under a leafless elm. No one could speak English, and they ordered by pointing their red fingers and shrugging. Instead of getting what they thought they had ordered, they each got a large meatball covered in gravy. and a mug of hot chocolate and a huge square of gingerbread. The waiter smiled at them as they ate. It was delicious. Morley hardly let them stop. She wanted to keep moving forever. She was thinking, this is why people dance. Dave, who had been having trouble keeping up to her right from the beginning, was wondering how you said cardiac arrest in Dutch. Finally, an hour after lunch, Morley stopped and turned, and Dave puffed up to her, and he flopped on the bank. Morley said, stand up. He struggled up, and she made him cross his arms over his chest, and she skated behind him, and she said, lean back. He tipped his head back, and she said, all of you. She said, trust me, I'm here. Dave leaned back into her arms, and she caught him, and she pushed him along the canal as if he were a statue. It started to snow, and it was like they were skating through a painting. Dave leaning back, Morley pushing the snow on their hats, their mittens, their sweaters, everything white, above and below them, the white sky and the white ice, like they were floating. They had waffles and hot cheese for supper, and they bought a wooden toy for their balcony that would move in the wind. Dave carried the toy home in his lap. He's being so careful not to knock it as he stood up to leave the plane that he snagged the sweater Morley had knitted for him on the side of his seat. He'd taken four or five steps before he realized what had happened. The wool had caught where Morley had dropped a stitch, and the sweater had begun to unravel behind him, so there was a strand of blue wool hanging from his waist that almost reached the floor. When he caught up to Morley, he was clutching the wooden toy, and the line of wool was dangling behind him like a tail. He didn't know what to say, so he didn't say anything. He just thrust the toy into her arms, and he turned around, and they stood in the middle of the walkway staring at the hole. And the man behind them said, excuse me, and people started to push past them. So Morley reached down and gathered up the line of the wool, and they started to walk through the airport. Dave a step ahead of Morley, like a kid on a line. And they walked that way to the luggage carousel, and they walked that way out to the taxis, and they're still walking like that today, attached together, drifting apart sometimes, but never so far apart that one can't reel the other one in.
That's the story we call Holland. The ending of that story is one of my favorite things that Stuart ever wrote. I can see it. Morley walking behind Dave with that bouquet of wool. The two of them walking through the airport like that. Dave ahead of Morley, but connected by that length of wool. To me, that scene perfectly captures what marriage is like. I know everyone has different experiences with marriage, and also that everyone views it differently. But one thing I think most people agree on is that for a marriage to be good, it requires some work, some compromise, and some expectation management. I don't know anyone whose marriage is all fairy tale. And that passage captures that idea, but it also captures the safety and security that a good marriage provides. Let me put this another way. There is magic in marriage, but it's not what most people think it is, or at least not what you think it is at the beginning. The magic, in my opinion, is less fairy dust, less fairy tale, and more seatbelt. This is an idea that Stuart and I used to talk a lot about. My role in his life, both as his friend and his producer, was often just that, safety net. It's important. As a creative, you have to take risks. You have to put yourself out there. And to do that, you need to know that someone's going to be there to catch you when you fall. I knew my role was to look after the other stuff so that Stuart could leap. and so that he'd know I would always be there at the bottom with outstretched hands. We often talked about the importance of that, of feeling safe and of being seen or understood, which in a way are similar and connected. It's hard to feel safe if you don't feel understood. We talked about that as creatives a bit, but we mostly talked about that just as friends, because it's like that for all of us. We have to leap, and you can only leap if you know there's going to be someone at the bottom ready to catch you when you fall. Because you will fall sometimes. We all do. That's how we learn. That's how we grow. If you never fall, then you're probably not leaping enough. And I think that story that you just heard, especially that scene at the end, captures this beautifully. The idea that the best relationships, marriages, parent-child, friendships, and even work relationships, the best relationships are a mix of togetherness and independence, a mix of supporting someone, of being their safety net so that they can leap, of trusting them to catch you when you fall, and of leaping together, hand in hand. And if you can find that, well, that may not be fairy tale, but it is magic. We have to take a short break now, but we'll be back in a minute or two with another story about love. So stay with me.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome back. Time for our second story now. If you listened to the Vinyl Cafe on the radio back in the day, then you'll remember we had a segment where you wrote the stories. It was called the Vinyl Cafe Story Exchange, and it was one of the most popular segments on the show. We used to ask you, the audience, to send us your stories, and then Stuart would read them on the radio show. There were only two rules. The stories had to be true, and they had to be short. Other than that, it was up to you. We read every single story that came in. There were thousands. We received several thousand stories in that very first month when we put out the call. In the 15 years that the Story Exchange aired on the Vinyl Cafe, I bet we would have received over 10,000 stories from people in Canada and the United States and around the world. We read every single story, and Stuart read some of our favorites on the radio. We started this podcast a year ago, and so many of you have written us and said, "What about the Story Exchange? Bring it back." And so today, we're going to play Stuart reading one of the Vinyl Cafe Story Exchanges. We used to get so many love stories at the Story Exchange, and this is one of our favorites. This is a story sent in by listener David Cameron of Bowen Island, British Columbia.
"Dear Stuart," writes David, "it was Valentine's Day, 1994, and time was running out. I still hadn't got my beloved wife and mother of my child a gift or a card. I didn't want to buy the pre-packaged sentiments of Hallmark, but I didn't feel like standing in the 5:30 tulip line at the general store with all the other desperate men. Nope. I was waiting for something special to come along. But it was late in the day, and there I was, in my capacity as a builder, scraping and digging amongst the foundations of a customer's house. My chances for a romantic evening were looking slim. And that's when my spade hit a particularly immovable rock. I dug around it, levered it out with a pry bar, and behold, Cupid had answered my prayers. There was a 10-pound rock in the perfect shape of a heart. Now, if I'd seen this very same rock the day before, I might have thought it was potato-shaped. But like I said, I was desperate. She'll love it, I thought, as I brushed off the bigger chunks of dirt. And then I spent the rest of the workday chiseling our initials into the rock with somebody else's wood chisel. I hopped into my trusty white van, and I drove home, imagining as I drove my wife's delighted reaction. I was so tickled with anticipation that I drove right up to the front door stairs, and I bounded in with a prize in hand and thrust it proudly at my heart's desire. Now, in my wife's defense, she had spent the day alone with a 3-year-old, and I was late for dinner. She looked blankly at what I laid on the coffee table and muttered, "A rock." We had a quiet dinner, after which I quickly volunteered to do the dishes. And then, the plates dried and everything back in its place, there was only one thing left to do. I glanced at the coffee table, and there it sat, 10 pounds of humiliation. I grabbed the rock. I opened the front door. I hefted it out like a shot put. It was only as it left my fingertips and was sailing through the air that I remembered exactly where I had parked my van. The new windshield cost $259.69. The new wood chisel cost $15.78. The following year for Valentine's, I bought my wife a nice Hallmark card, $4.75. That story came to us from David Cameron of Bowen Island, British Columbia.
That was Stuart McLean reading a story written by Vinyl Cafe listener David Cameron. And that was from the Vinyl Cafe Story Exchange. We know you miss the Story Exchange. You've told us. So we'll be bringing it back from time to time, playing a few of our favorites. And we're ready to read a few of your favorites, too. We're opening up our inboxes. Do you have a story you'd like to share with us? We would love to read it. We will read everything you send us, and we'll read some of our favorites, new stories, right here on this podcast. You can send us your story by email. Just head over to our website, vinylcafe.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, that's it for today, but we will be back right here next week with another Dave and Morley story.
No one, well, certainly not me anyway, is ever going to reconcile to anyone's satisfaction the many and conflicting opinions about which of the thousands and thousands of hockey games ever played on ice was the greatest game of them all. Although, if you ever had the chance, as I have, to raise that question with any of the old-timers who live in the town of Big Narrows in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, you would be told that the matter was settled over a half century ago. For they'd tell you, as they have told me, that the greatest game in hockey history was played in the autumn of 1945.
Backstage at the Vinyl Cafe is part of the Apostrophe Podcast Network. The recording engineer is someone whose wife, Sandra, keeps his sweater from unraveling, Greg DeClute. Theme music is written by Danny Michel and played beautifully today by Rob Carley. And the show is produced by Louise Curtis, Greg DeClute, and me, Jess Milton. Let's meet again next week. Until then, so long for now.